I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, we are turning our attention to rugby. Alan Quinlan, a very good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Let's get straight into it. On the front of the Daily Telegraph sports section this morning, Bill Sweeney of the RFU has been speaking about the possibility of summer rugby. So just the three quick points from this. Six Nations is going to be aligned with summer Southern Hemisphere Rugby Championship, which we already knew. Then there will be 30 weekends for club rugby from January to August in two blocks, obviously either side of the Six Nations. And then the summer tours, including the Lions, will move to October. What are your thoughts on all of this?
I'm not sure, Owen, to be honest. I think it's, moving away from the traditional kind of winter rugby in the Northern Hemisphere is something that would take a bit of getting used to. The pros and cons, I suppose the pros would be if you move to summer rugby, you know, better underfoot conditions, more attractive rugby, no drab, rainy kind of, you're still, there's always a chance you'll get them anyway, even in spring. And so there's, I think the calendar needs to be aligned better. There's no doubt about it. That will improve the game and make it, you know, an even playing keel more. But I just don't know, because there's a lot of speculation, I think, and there's a lot of talk about different sorts of change in the game, and certainly moving the Six Nations from February, March to March, April. That would probably improve your chances of getting better weather and the rugby championship moving the other way a little bit to try and keep them on around the same time, which, you know, I've said this a few times to you, you know, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia coming up here in November is at the end of their season. It's kind of at the start of the international season for the Northern Hemisphere team. So in an ideal world, you try and align them and have them both kind of finishing around the same time, which probably makes sense. So it certainly needs to be some change, because sometimes change is good, but I'm not really sure, you know, how it would all work at this stage.
Would summer rugby not be fantastic, Alan, because you'll have a better product? I know you'll say we'll get rainy days in Ireland anyway, but also as well, you're not going up against the Premier League for the vast majority of your club season.
Yeah, but if you play summer rugby, you know, you're kind of potentially clashing it with a World Cup every couple of years, European Championships, Olympics, all that kind of stuff. And in Ireland here, the GAA. So, again, these are things that you can't cover every base. I think if you move away from tradition that's been there for so long, I think you will get some resistance to it. The big pro to this, Owen, is, you know, the better conditions, you know, and the ability to go out and watch a game in a T-shirt, and for the players to be on dry ground, really, and firm ground, and you would probably get more attractive rugby. So there's that would be the big improvement. But I think any sort of change in sport would take time to get used to. And if they did run a season from, you know, say January up to the end of October, it would possibly work and align the seasons. The big factor in all this will be the clubs, money, finances, sponsorship, and then ultimately the players. If you were a player finishing in October and being told that's your pre-season now, well, off you go and enjoy your summer break or your break from rugby. I suppose you could still fly off to the Southern Hemisphere for your holidays and stuff like that, but there's a lot of change around that. But ultimately, if it's better for the game, and I know this will be teased out in the next while, there is ongoing talks, and it's worth some sort of change, definitely. Maybe not drastically changing the whole season completely, but trying to realign things a little bit better would definitely probably needs to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they left some elite level sport in for the bleak midwinter months and not remove it all from us entirely. One other line we wanted to get your thoughts on, Quinny, it's exclusive by Derek Foley in the Irish Daily Star this morning, that Joe Schmidt is being tapped up by Gloucester. He was on with us last week and it definitely felt like he was of a view that he'd been looking at a lot of rugby, speaking to a lot of people, and maybe he's of a mind to get back. There's two roles there, director of rugby and head coach, that are vacant now after David Humphreys and Johan Ackerman are gone. But Schmidt, Richard Cockerell, Rob Howley, who's back in the game, an interesting piece with him in the Mail during the week about the gambling issue that he had and how that all came. It's a fascinating backstory that's well worth a read. Di Young, Michael Checa, and Stuart Lancaster, another one, all being linked with Gloucester.
Yeah, it's no surprise, really. I think Joe Schmidt will be linked with any job that comes up in World Rugby at the moment. And it was interesting because I was listening to Andy Good speaking about Johan Ackerman's departure a couple of weeks ago from Gloucester, and how he'd signed a new contract last year and suddenly he's gone and he's going to Japan. So all is not well in Gloucester, I don't think. And it seems like it was a nice parting of ways with David Humphreys as well, but I don't think that is the case. I think it hasn't ended well there, in my opinion. And Andy Good is right in what he was saying as well. So we always hear about these departures. Everyone shook hands and everyone's happy to move on. But so I don't know.
It's such a weird time for somebody to
any coach or
manager that leaves now. It seems weird.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's a little bit like what Dan Toohey said on the Indo this morning, where he's speaking about everyone being PC and nobody saying anything, nobody speaking out. It just doesn't seem right for me that David Humphreys will just suddenly decide, well, it's the right time to go and move on and let somebody else take over the reins. And we've done X, Y, and Z in Gloucester, and you know we've set up a good foundation here and platform. It's not all. I can't believe it's all perfect there, but look, he's gone. Ackerman is gone.
You'd hate to see Stuart Lancaster lost from the Irish game, Quinny.
What do you mean by that now, Adrian? That if he went, are you suggesting that I'd be happy if he went and Leinster lost out on lost ground a little bit?
If that's your interpretation of it, Quinny, roll with it.
But I'm not sure, you'd have to clarify that. But look, I'm sure Stuart, again, he's like Joe Schmidt. These guys are highly sought rugby coaches, and they've international experience as well. When you go to a club game and you see the impact that Stuart Lancaster has made in Leinster, you know, when you're in that level above and coaching international players and you're back down with the everyday coaching of club players, and that's where, you know, Joe excelled and excelled with Clermont, with Leinster, and that's why he would be of interest to any club. And so that's not a surprise, really. It's really down to whether he throws his hat in the ring and takes a job in the club game. He has said, not just with us last Friday, but that, you know, he does want to get back into the game and coaching. So whether that's at international or club level, who knows? Would he still base himself in Ireland? Would he commute over and back and do what Stuart Lancaster is doing here? That's a possibility as well to do that. So it's something that may interest him.
Just one last one from this on me. Is there any possibility that, because he does, there was obviously all that speculation towards the end of his time with Ireland that he, was he going to go back to New Zealand and all that? And he's obviously made the decision now that Ireland is the place for him, regardless of the work scenario, as you say, he may commute. Is there any possibility that Joe Schmidt gets back involved in the Irish game at some level soon?
Well, I don't think in the next little while. I think if he takes another job somewhere in France or the UK or stays in the Northern Hemisphere, I think there's no reason why he may not come back and coach Ireland again or coach one of the provinces again. I'm sure if there was an opening or an opportunity in one of the provinces, they'd be very keen to have him. I think his relationship with the RFU has been very good, and I think he's proven quality. He's someone who brings trophies to whatever team he goes to. So There's absolutely no doubt that he could be back involved coaching one of the provinces or Ireland again in the future, for sure.
Like, it's slightly ludicrous thing, but like, I mean, if you look at a province like Connacht, for example, like somebody with his mind almost in a director of rugby role would be, Jesus, would be an unbelievable lift for them.
Well, I think with his experience, and as I said, with his ability to win trophies, I think any club would be delighted to have him. But again, this is going to be down to Joe. I think he has, he will have the luxury of being able to pick and choose. He's not like some rugby coaches who were desperate to get back into work and applying for every job that goes there, which is, it's a tough market. You know, you end up, you know, losing your job somewhere, and it's harder to get another job. We know how ruthless it is here in Ireland. If you don't do well and you lose your job and you're under pressure, you're kind of written off a little bit. And so, of course, yeah, if he did go to Connacht, but again, these are IRFU decisions, and you know that would be a big step. And Andy Friend is already there, and I think he's doing a fantastic job with Connacht and what he's doing.
Yeah. Alan, one last thing we wanted to chat about was our classic game club this week, which is Shane Horgan's try. It's Croke Park, 2007, Ireland against England. An incredible game, an incredible try. What a performance by Ireland. Where were you during this? Where were you for the game, and what was the build-up like from your perspective?
I was sitting in the stand. I was on the extended squad, so I trained with the group throughout that Six Nations, and unfortunately I couldn't get into the team. A lot of good players there, and I just think it was a special time for anyone. I was very envious that I wasn't out in the field, but very proud to be Irish that day, particularly given the history and of everything that happened and the whole build up. I think it was just a really, I was very proud of the fact that the Irish fans that day showed a lot of respect to England, and we didn't let ourselves down by booing and jeering and stuff like that. And when they played their anthem and stuff like that. So I think it was, and that kind of added to the sense, that kind of spooked the English players. I remember speaking to some of them afterward, and some of them spoke in the media that they expected that bit of hatred and they were going to try and use that to give them a little bit of an edge, like that they were backed into a corner. And really when their anthem came on and there was silence and it was respected, I think they were a bit shocked themselves. So it was a very special day. I think it was an incredible build up to the game and an incredible performance as well. So I think it's one that people will look back on in many, many years to come. And it's etched up in history there as being a very special day for not just for Irish rugby, but for Irish sport and for Irish people as a society, that just the history and associated with the whole thing and the way the GAA opened up the grounds and stuff like that. So it was special for the players and special for the whole group to be involved. And as I said, what a performance.
Were you close to getting in, Quinny? Were you close to being in the squad, or what was the conversation like, Eddie Sullivan?
My usual story, about two steps away, Adrian. I think I trained with the squad and warmed up with them and got back into the suit and took my seat in the stand. So I was, you know, a couple of, unfortunately, I just couldn't get into the back row and they were playing really well. And that was just a selection situation at the time. And I was coming back from my knee as well. So I think I was certainly behind the other players that year as regards fitness and performance and consistency and all that kind of stuff. So, but it was a brilliant team. There was some great leaders in that team, fantastic players who went on to, the vast majority went on to win a Grand Slam a couple of years later. But I just don't think that any team would have beaten Ireland that day, given what was at stake and what was on the line, really. And it was a very emotional day. You saw the emotion, John Hayes, who never really showed any emotion. He's crying in the anthem and stuff like that. So it was nice to be part of the training group that throughout that whole thing. But again, unfortunately, I was envious. I wasn't out in the field, but very proud of the players. I think they were absolutely amazing, the performance they put in.
Yeah, for sure. Alan Quinlan, thanks a million for hopping on this morning.
Cheers, lads.
Alan Quinlan there on the line. He's with us every Friday morning here on OTB AM.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.